Today we welcome Doug Traversa as our speaker. As you know, he's the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tullahoma. He completed his seminary studies at Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago. You also know he's a retired Air Force officer. He and his wife, Jancy, live in Tullahoma. In addition to his interest in gaming and Buddhism and all things UU, Doug is a dog lover, and he and Jancy often have several foster dogs. Today, Doug will speak on the topic, the transient and the permanent. Let's welcome Doug.
This is the second of two sermons that I gave over the last month at our church, and I have to give you a little background. I'm not doing the first one here because it was pretty much focused on our church and its consideration of buying a new building. I shared with you last time I was here that we were looking at that possibility. And we did actually put a bid in and we're awaiting a response. So this is a time of great anxiety for some, excitement for some, a time of possible transition and a time of being up in the air and wondering what's going on. And as we entered this period, I felt it was very important, knowing that we didn't have unanimous agreement on anything in a UU congregation for the most part, but in particular, should we try to buy a new building or should we stay where we are? The financial aspect is always scary. And so I talked about the fact that the church is not a building. This is the sermon you're not getting. But the bottom line of this is, church is often used today in our English language to not only mean a group of people, but also the building they meet in. But the church building is not the church. And what I continue to emphasize and did for the last month is the church is the gathering of people. Since you don't own a building, you know this even better than we do because you're not attached to a physical structure. Wherever you meet, and I know you don't use the word church, you use congregation or fellowship or something else, whatever word you use, and I'll use church for the purpose of discussion, it is the people that make it up. The early Christian church wasn't a bunch of buildings. Oftentimes they met in homes or had to meet in secret when they were being persecuted. The church was the body of Christ, is what it was referred to. And it was always personified as a thing made up of living beings. And so what I emphasize to our congregation is no matter what happens in the future, whether we move or not, whether we make an offer and it gets rejected and people are disappointed, none of that matters. What matters is the collection of individuals coming together in community, helping each other as they seek to find truth and meaning in their lives, and also hoping to learn from each other as well as they share the paths they're on. And so the fact that the church is not a building, I think, helped to emphasize as we went into the actual voting process that ultimately what we're deciding is what tool helps us to do this better in our community. Does a different type of building help us or not? Does it affect how we reach out to the community? Does it affect how we interact with each other or not? It should never be an impediment, but rather it should be just something that helps us to more effectively minister. So the transient and the permanent comes from a sermon title. I actually gave a sermon on Theodore Parker a while back, and I'm finding it very distracting, please. Thank you. It's hard for me to concentrate when there's other conversations going on. So the title comes from a sermon by Theodore Parker, who was a famous Unitarian minister, and he was trying to emphasize the fact that there are some things within our religion that are important, that they last, that they have lasting consequences, and there are some things that are temporary and unimportant, and we should not get caught up in those. And so as we go into this idea of what it is in a congregation that matters, that sticks with us, that we should be focused on, we need to also consider the things that really can cause division that should not be causing divisions, the things that just become impediments. And the other thing I'm going to reference besides Theodore Parker is a essay out of a book called Turning Point, Essays on a New Unitarian Universalism, a collection of 20 essays concerning the future of our religion. It's inspiring and cautionary at the same time because the authors are examining both our strengths and our weaknesses as a religion, or if you prefer, as a movement or an association, whatever word you are most comfortable with. As you read something like this, it can be personally uncomfortable because sometimes the things that you think are really good strengths, they might be criticizing or might cause you to think a little differently about something you hold dear. And this is going to be true in something like Unitarian Universalism, where we are a collection of people with a wide, diverse series of views and opinions. Maybe we're not as diverse as we'd like to think we are, though. Sometimes we pat ourselves on the back a little too much, and maybe we're a little too much alike, and maybe not as open-minded as we think. And I've talked about this also. So anyway, it's always good to have your comfort challenged a little bit as you try to really think what makes us most effective for the future. So back to Theodore Parker first. He was a Unitarian minister and Transcendentalist. He delivered a famous sermon in 1841 entitled The Transient and the Permanent in Christianity. Now I gave a sermon back in June 2014 on this, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. If you want to go to our website, if you want to get more on this topic, it's available. But I'm going to use it as a launching point for my talk today. Parker believed that there was a core teaching, the permanent, that really mattered in Christianity. And what you're going to find is that permanent thing is very different from what you might think. Also remember that back then Unitarianism was a form of Christianity. So if you are uncomfortable with my use of the word Christian throughout this sermon, you can substitute in your mind Unitarian Universalism or something else that works for you, because it really does transcend just Christianity. But he was coming from the perspective of a liberal Christian. I spoke about liberal religion a little while ago. And he was certainly an advocate of a liberal perspective. So listen to what he says about Christianity of his day and age, 1840. You know, this is 20 years before the Civil War. We haven't been a country, we've been a country less than 100 years at this point. So this is quite a ways back. And he says something this provocative. An age will come in which ours shall be reckoned a period of darkness. Like the 6th century, when men groped for the wall but stumbled and fell because they trusted a transient notion, not an eternal truth. An age when temples were full of idols, set up by human folly, an age in which Christian light had scarce begun to shine into men's hearts. While this change goes on, while one generation of opinions passes away and another rises up, Christianity itself, that pure religion which exists eternal in the constitution of the soul and the mind of God, is always the same. This is the permanent now. The only form it demands is a divine life, doing the best thing in the best way from the highest motives. Now, you're thinking to the hummingbird story. We didn't coordinate on this, but that's the same thing. Do the best you can. The best way you can, from the highest motives. And in Parker's mind, the highest motives would be to try to exemplify the divinity within each one of us, to try to emulate the perfection of God as best you can. He also argues that true Christianity does not demand all people to think alike, but to think rightly and get near as possible at truth. Not all men to live alike, and pardon the sexist language, but that's how he spoke. Not all men to live alike, but to live holy and get near as possible to a life perfectly divine. He also argued that true Christianity, were it practiced properly, would lead not to conformity, but to vast diversity. Now think about that. true Christianity would be incredibly diverse. Christianity lays no rude hand on the sacred peculiarity of individual genius and character. But there is no Christian sect which does not fetter a man. Think about that. There is no Christian sect that does not put handcuffs on you and tie you up. All Christian groups do this to the individual. That's pretty provocative. Parker says they're all alike. They all fetter people. It would make all men think alike or smother their convictions in silence. Think right or keep your mouth shut. They all do it. Were all men Quakers or Catholics or Unitarians or Baptists, there would be much less diversity of thought, character, and life. Less of truth active in the world than now, but Christianity gives us the largest liberty of the sons of God. And were all men Christians after the fashion of Jesus, this variety would be 1,000 times greater than now. For Christianity is not a system of doctrines, but rather a method of attaining oneness with God. So he argues that the permanent, the true aspect of Christianity that is not practiced, would allow for great variety. And you would all be free to seek that on your own. And you would not be forced to conform or be silent. But people aren't doing that. The Christian groups weren't doing that. And he said, this was the true teaching of Jesus. Now, as you might imagine, that didn't necessarily go along with the teachings of the day. In fact, it contradicted them in large degree. And so Parker was, once again, viewed as a heretic, one of those crazy Unitarians, not a true Christian, because he dared to say that it's not about conformity. It's not about a system of doctrines or a statement of faith. It's about the freedom to do the best thing in the best way from the highest motive. So he argues that what passed for Christianity in his day was merely human tradition and dogma. He points out that Jesus never wrote anything down himself. None of the Gospels were written by Jesus. Nothing in our modern Bible was written by Jesus. What he felt was important was something simple enough to remember as it was passed by mouth, that you could talk and tell someone and they could listen and remember it. And if true Christianity were simple enough to teach by word of mouth, how important could all the esoteric teachings really be? All these minuscule, minute attention to detail on one doctrine after another that have to be itemized in lists. Not important. Rather, those things are destructive and should be done away with. He wanted Unitarians to focus on the permanent, not the transient or the temporary. He wanted them to do the best thing in the best way for the highest motives. Today, I'd like us to consider the transient and the permanent in Unitarian Universalism. Ours is a religion struggling with its identity, as it always seems to, especially since the merger in 1961 of the Unitarians and the Universalists. In fact, we even struggle with what word we should use. We are the Unitarian Universalist Association, but are we an association or a movement or a denomination or a religion or something else? Again, something I've talked about many times, and I like to use the word religion. I think that one embraces a wide variety of beliefs and does not demand certain views, as is often the case, that you believe in God, a particular God. Religion isn't like that. Religion is a human construction that allows us to come together in community, meet together, and seek to find deeper meaning in our lives and understand the best way to live as best we can. So these things, these God concepts, these doctrines and dogmas, these are not the permanent things. They should not be the permanent elements of Unitarian Universalism. Consider the words of our current UUA president, Peter Morales, and now I'm quoting from the book Turning Point that I mentioned. Here is the challenge as I see it. At the personal level, people need religious community. We are relational creatures who only become fully human in a web of loving and committed relationships. This is the ideal of covenanted community. At the global level, the world desperately needs movements that embrace human diversity, are committed to compassion and justice, and that seek to live in harmony with the web of life on Earth. So here are some of the things that I'm going to call the permanent. Embracing human diversity, being committed to compassion and justice, seeking to live in harmony with the web of life on Earth. Or as Parker said, because I'm going to keep hammering this, do the best thing in the best way for the highest motives. What things are transient? Names, buildings, organizational structures, theological beliefs, God concepts are all transient. They change. Our view of what God might be, if you really stop and honestly think about it and go back to what it might have been 3,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago, where God was essentially a superpowered monarch. And nowadays, we have concepts of God that include the universe becoming self-aware that we're all part of this thing called God. God is a force as opposed to an entity. God is part of the universe instead of separate from it as a creative force. God concepts evolve and change. They are not permanent. And of course, the makeup of our congregations are not permanent. We lose our beloved members to death, or they move away. Some simply find that this no longer meets their needs, and they go somewhere else. And others come in and fill the void and keep that congregation alive. I know when I look out at the congregation of my church and try to compare that to the faces I saw on the first day I was there, easily 80% of those faces are new. And that's just over the course of almost 9 years. Even the makeup of our congregations is transient. I return to Peter Morales for a couple more thoughts. We need to take ourselves seriously as a religious movement. We have been wary for so long of being like the evangelical fundamentalists that we often lose sight of the fact that we too are a religious movement. Religion is not and never has been about agreeing to a set of theological principles or agreeing to philosophical propositions. Religion has always been about so much more. At its center is a community of people who come together to carry on a tradition and to shape a common future, what some call a community of memory and hope. So think about that last line. At its center is a community of people who come together to carry on a tradition and shape a common future, what some call a community of memory and hope. Those are interesting words. I suspect that most of us have thought and may think now that religion is definitely about agreeing to a set of theological propositions. It's what we were taught as children growing up, a lot of us. It's why so many churches have these creeds and statements of faith. These are the things we all believe as we gather on Sunday morning. And we can recite a creed depending on which denomination you're in. I was in a Lutheran denomination for a few years, and we would pull out these creeds from our hymn books and read them all together every day that we met as though we all believed all these things. And you would say, we believe these things. And yet, most people didn't really believe all those things because people don't always agree on all things. So that really shouldn't be what a religion is, an agreement on all things. And so some people then have a serious objection to that word religion. But what if instead we think of a religion as a community of people who do these things that Peter Morales just mentioned? We carry on a tradition. We shape a common future. Now, this whole idea of what is a religion is wonderfully illustrated by something that just happened to me. We have actually every student that goes to our church is homeschooled. None of them go to school. That encompasses three different families and for a total of eight children. And so one of them takes their kids to the homeschooling group in Shelbyville, where everyone is predominantly Christian, but they allow these oddball Unitarian Universalists to come in. And one of the women there is actually pretty broad-minded, and she's teaching a course to the high schoolers on world religions. And so they shared this story with me, and I said, well, if you'd like me to go out there and speak to them on Buddhism, I'd be happy to. It's always fun. And lo and behold, they invited me. And so I got to sit down with four high school kids and their teacher, and I pulled out all the mats that we use to meditate on, the cushions, and I set them in a circle, and I showed them how the ritual worked, and they all sat there and what would as close as they could to a full lotus or half lotus position, and we spoke to each other for about 45 minutes like that. And I told them about the fact that we have Christians who participate in Zen Buddhism out in Nashville, which sort of blew their minds. And then I said, well, you have to understand, in Zen Buddhism, we don't talk about the afterlife. The Buddha said, I don't know what happens after you die. Don't ask me. I'm worried about the suffering in the world now. And they couldn't let that go. And they kept asking, well, what do you believe? What do you think happens after we die? And finally, after more discussion, one of the students, probably 14 years old, give or take, looks at me very intently and says, so is Buddhism even a religion? And I said, that is an excellent question. And does it matter? What the word religion is just a label that we humans use. And so I told him what I thought a religion was, and I said, but it really doesn't matter. In Asia, real life, secular life, religion, it's all one thing. So that you don't have to separate your daily life and your religion. And so it's just a label, and it really doesn't matter. That's sort of how we can look at it. Whatever it is we are, I mean, the government cares if we're a religion because you get your tax exemption. But that's an artificial construct created by our government to separate what we do from, say, what a business does that tries to make a profit. So we don't pay taxes and they do. But it's both life. What we do here is life. This is not some artificial separation from life or from the world. It shouldn't be. So the whole getting wrapped around the axle about what religion is, that might just be going down a rabbit trail too and really irrelevant to the larger discussion. But we're going to stick with it for this final quote from Peter Morales. For me, religion is not about having faith, but about being faithful. Faith is not something you or I possess. It's about a relationship, really, a set of ongoing relationships. My religion is about being faithful to what I hold dear, about being faithful to my commitments to people close to me, and about being faithful to what I hold sacred. So think about that. Religion is not about having faith, but about being faithful to the people, to your congregation, to what you hold sacred. One thing that has truly touched me over the years is the faithfulness of the people in my congregation. And not to say that everyone is flawless, because certainly not, but there is genuine care and compassion for each other in that group. And I've witnessed it over and over again, and it's a core aspect of any religion worth practicing, and certainly something that should be permanent, not transient. I'm sure the same is true of this congregation. I just don't know you as well. But I would imagine it is, having the discussions I've had with you and getting to know you as well as I have. I dare say that's also a true statement here. Now, what I closed this sermon with, which isn't applicable to you, is this whole the struggle with, are we going to vote on buying a new building or not, because this is the sermon I gave before the vote. And we didn't really have a talk back on it, so this will be unique in that I've given the sermon two times, but you're going to get to do the first talk back about it. But I will tell you this, having emphasized time and again the importance of things that are permanent having emphasized what a church truly is, the makeup of the people, the vote was not a contentious issue. And it certainly has that potential to be, but it was not. So whatever the outcome was, we gave everyone a chance to voice their concerns. We listened to what everyone had to say. We are very open about the entire process from beginning to end. And this is a good lesson for anything any congregation does. And if you ever have to make a big step on any decision, I would encourage that everything always be as open as possible, that everyone have their say. This is what helps you to tie yourselves closer together, that people aren't left out of these processes, that people are considered important because you listen to their voice. So what I would encourage for you and for us and for all, that as we build our congregations, that we wrestle with the nature of what it is to be a Unitarian Universalist, that we nonetheless emphasize the permanent things. Compassion, mutual support, living in harmony with the earth, protecting each person's freedom to search for truth and meaning. May we keep our focus on these things, no matter where we meet, no matter how large or small your congregation may grow, no matter what the changes are in the transient membership that we have, may the Unitarian Universalist congregations throughout this country be known for these things, for the permanent things, as opposed to the transient. May we be known by our love, by our compassion, by our care for the world that we live in, and for our defense of the freedom of all people, for freedom of religion and thought and philosophy, and know that they can come to one of our congregations and be supported as they wrestle with these bigger things. May this be so.